Scrolling for June 29th, 2020. I'm Steve Boder.
I'm Chip Hassenflaw.
And I'm Pam Bedore.
And we are back with another chapter of The Sign of Four. This chapter nine, we're getting close to the end of this already, aren't we? This is exciting part of the story where Holmes gets kind of frustrated, where his investigation isn't going the way he expected. Chapter nine, a break in the chain.
I feel like this story is going by so quickly. I can't believe we're already chapter 9 of 12. It feels like we just started to me.
This story is a sprint, absolutely. Oh. And in fact, it just has a lot of momentum. Every chapter just pushes forward.
So the opening of this chapter follows directly. It was late in the afternoon before I woke, strengthened and refreshed. Sherlock Holmes still sat exactly as I had left him, save that he had laid aside his violin and was deep in a book. He looked across at me as I stirred, and I noticed that his face was dark and troubled. And so Holmes explains that Wiggins was just here, and he can't believe it, but the Baker Street irregulars have come up empty. And he was totally expecting results from those awesome little street kids. So
it seemed like a great plan. Seemed like a perfect way to find something. If you need something found, you send, 15 little kids all over the city and give them the mission of finding it. And probably they'll be able to do it, but they came up short.
Yeah.
Holmes and Watson disagree about women. This is a very interesting scene where Watson asks what he can do to help, and Holmes says, you can't do anything.
Steve, there's a general who once said, it's a trap. Do not discuss this.
Guys, there's definitely a trap here. I love this scene. So Watson says, then I shall run over to Camberwell and call upon Mrs. Cecil Forrester. She asked me to yesterday. On Mrs. Cecil Forrester, asked Holmes with a twinkle of a smile in his eyes. Well, of course, on Miss Marston, too. They were anxious to hear what happened. I would not tell them too much, said Holmes. Women are never to be entirely trusted, not the best of them. And Watson says, I did not pause to argue over this atrocious sentiment.
Yeah, I'm not either. I'm not saying anything about this.
How about that? How about Doyle being in the midst of the feminist movement and actually putting this in the text where Holmes says something awful and sexist and Watson goes, nope, I am not going to touch that with a 10-foot pole.
Poor form, Holmes. Poor form.
But good form on Doyle. This is good on Doyle. This is exactly what we've been talking about with racism in pop culture. If you have racism in pop culture to make the point that this is ugly and awful and that we should stop doing these things, this is a great example here.
Well, there's exactly the power of literature, the ability to discuss topics that may not be easy to talk about face-to-face, but you certainly could explore them in writing.
Also something so Victorian about this where, Watson and Holmes, they're best friends, but instead of saying, hey, I think if there's nothing I can do here, buddy, I'm going to go over and see that cute girl I met yesterday. Watson, and you could picture him with his little tie and his hat. He's like, I'm going to go call upon Mrs. Cecil Forrester, who seemed rather upset last night. And Holmes is like, buddy, we both know you're going to see Mary, the cute girl. But there's this sort of decorum around the visit, the call, that just reminds us that we are in the Victorian age.
It's an Old Spice day, if you know what I mean.
Thank you, Jeff.
Nope. I have no idea what you mean. You should keep your spices on the shelf for about 30 days, and then you should throw them out because then they're Old Spice. Watson returns Toby, the dog, giving the naturalist a half sovereign for the dog's services. Then he goes and visits Mary. I told them all that we had done, suppressing, however, the more dreadful parts of the tragedy. Thus, although I spoke of Mr. Sholto's death, I said nothing of the exact manner of it. With all my omissions, however, there was enough to startle and amaze them. Aw, Watson, the star of this book.
I know. And he's also, women being so delicate, he had to really, censor the story a little bit. He couldn't tell them exactly how he had found the body. But hello, don't forget that the housekeeper looked in through the keyholes. She saw the dead body. I have a feeling Miss Mary Morstan is strong enough to handle such things.
And why would they get rid of Toby? Toby could just hang out at the bachelor flat.
Toby lives in house number 7. Don't forget, he lives in like a neighborhood with 43 dogs. He has his own home with a number. He's not going to live with number. Watson and I just loved the numbered huts. Now, Mrs. Forrester is pretty excited by this tale of Watson's. She says, "It is a romance. An injured lady, half a million in treasure, a black cannibal, and a wooden-legged ruffian. They take the place of the conventional dragon or wicked earl." "And two knight-errants to the rescue," added Miss Morstan with a bright glance at me.
Oh, my. Oh, look at that. Oh, little flirtatious talk.
Here, right?
This is the theme of this story, right? Doyle started out with, this is going to be a mystery, not one of those romance stories, because he was writing one of those romance stories here.
Exactly. And this is such a great moment where you have that sort of metafiction, right? Where you have that, like, within this story, you get this reflection on the fact that it's a story. And so, just in case you hadn't noticed how many outlandish features this very rational Sherlock Holmes story contains, Mrs. Forrester, like, wraps it up for you in a bow. Here it is. Look at all the crazy stuff in this story.
What happened last week?
Right, exactly.
Sherlock is upset. He is really troubled by the fact that this case doesn't seem to be going his way. Mrs. Hudson and Watson both notice it. He can be difficult, but this seems worse than usual, with lots of pacing and muttering and a lot of rudeness from Sherlock this time.
And Mrs. Hudson brings it up to Watson. And he says, "I tried to speak lightly to our worthy landlady, but I was myself somewhat uneasy when through the long night I still from time to time heard the dull sound of his tread and knew how his keen spirit was chafing against this involuntary inaction." And it's interesting because this is a novel that started with Sherlock's addiction to cocaine, right? Mm-hmm. And so Watson has been kind of happy the last couple of days that Holmes has got a lot going on. He's got stuff to do. But now he seems to have fallen into the darkest depression because it's not going well. So I think Watson has that sort of, "Oh, I hate that my friend is upset" feeling. But I think in the back of his mind, he's also like, this could welcome back the dreadful and unhealthy addiction.
Well, I was going to say, he also could be just coming down off his cocaine binge.
Right. Yeah.
True enough. Watson and Sherlock split up. This is Sherlock treating Watson as just another side character in this story and going, no, you'll have to just stay here while I go and do the investigation.
He decided Watson's going to be the Mary of this chapter.
Just left right. Behind.
You stay here.
Yes. Remember how fast the pace was, where the first 6 or 7 chapters all took place over like a period of 14 hours, and now we're just waiting, right? And so once again, there's no news all day. And so now the next day, it's funny, like when Watson wakes up in the early dawn, "I woke with a start and was surprised to find Sherlock standing by my bedside, clad in a rude sailor dress with a pea jacket and a coarse red scarf around his neck." And so he basically says, "I'm gonna go search for the boat myself." And Sherlock says, "I want you to open all notes and telegrams and to act on your own judgment if any news should come." So, big responsibility for John Watson. He is to act as Sherlock's agent in his absence.
So let's describe this scene. Watson is asleep. He opens his eyes and sees Holmes dressed in some garb.
Sailor Holmes.
Like, and he just wakes up like, "Why are you in front of me with your sailor garb?" And then just tells him, "Hey, listen, I'm off."
I've got a job for you, buddy. You're in charge of the telegrams. He's like, "Okay, I'll do it."
It's gotta be strange to go to sleep in that house.
You never know what's gonna happen while you're asleep, that's for sure. 100%. We get to the newspaper. John reads the morning paper. Friend Thaddeus and the housekeeper have been released. It is believed, however, that the police have a clue as to the real culprits, and that it is being prosecuted by Mr. Athelney Jones of Scotland Yard with all his well-known energy and sagacity. Further arrests may be expected at any moment.
Steve, I can't remember. Who was Thaddeus the brother of?
His brother's name is Brother Bartholomew. Don't you love how they keep referring to Thaddeus as either Friend Thaddeus or Friend Sholto? There's always that adjective in front of it in every reference to him. I love that.
But Brother Bartholomew only gets one.
I'm sorry, what?
I said Brother Bartholomew, Steve.
Brother Bartholomew!
And Friend Thaddeus.
Friend Thaddeus. I love it. This is fun. But yes, the newspaper seems to indicate that something is happening with this case that may or may not be happening. This may be a planted story, as we've seen many times before.
Indeed. And I feel like the newspaper here sort of functions as like Victorian social media, because John starts by reading the headlines. He reads the story that intersects with his own life. And then he also sees an advertisement in the Agony column about Mordecai Smith and his boat. And he sees there that you're supposed to, if you know anything about Mordecai Smith, you could either call at Mrs. Smith, Smith's Wharf, or at his very own address, 221B Baker Street. So now he sees why Sherlock was like, hey, get up, get into the drawing room. You could have some notes and telegrams.
Mm-hmm.
Victorian Twitter is so slow at that time.
But not really.
It is a slow process.
Everyone's reading the same thing, right? Like the media at this time is so much less decentralized than what it is today.
And this was one of the plans that Watson brought up to Sherlock earlier, and exactly. Sherlock dismissed it as, no, we're not going to do that. We're going to do this. But when the Baker Street Irregulars plan falls through, he goes, oh, well, maybe the newspaper is the right way to go.
Not only did he advertise in the newspaper, as John suggested, he just put on a sailor costume and he's off to look for the boat, which was John's very first suggestion. The only thing he hasn't done is ask the police for help.
So his sailor costume, can we just assume it looks like Popeye?
Yes. I mean, if you want to assume that in your mind,
it's a pea coat. Popeye wears a pea coat. The Robin Williams movie, Popeye wears a pea coat. I've seen it. It could happen.
I like that.
Smoking a corn cob pipe and eating spinach.
Gosh, where's me sweet pea?
And then, of course, we have a Bluto character here, the hairy guy.
Yeah. John is left home alone. He begins to question Sherlock. How about that, Pam?
Well, he really does. And he actually feels like not only is Sherlock acting more peculiar than usual, but what if he's wrong? And here's what John says. Might he be suffering from some huge self-deception? Was it not possible that his nimble and speculative mind had built up this wild theory upon faulty premises? I had never known him to be wrong, and yet the keenest reasoner may occasionally be deceived. This, my friends, is Athelney Jones thinking. I mean, right, this idea of calling Sherlock Mr. Theories. So,
what if those theories are built on something wrong? What if there was a wrong idea at the beginning and he's just building upon that? That would be an interesting mystery. Has there ever been a mystery that came out where the investigator was building his case wrong?
Oh, 100%. It's called, postmodern detective fiction is detective fiction where the detective specifically goes wrong the whole way through. It's a callback to the genre of detective fiction and super fun.
Breaking the trope. Right? Like we've mentioned so many times.
Don't do drugs. I think that's what's going on here.
Could be. I don't know. I think that, it's funny because I think with Sherlock, because he is so passionately invested in the case. We're not surprised that he's kind of going crazy that the case isn't moving. But Watson, he's our representative, right? Mm-hmm. He's like a much calmer, representing the reader kind of guy. Even he is starting to doubt. This is also showing us, like, now 2 days have passed with really no progress. And he's kind of reminding us, like, this is where you start to doubt if you even have a case.
Would Watson be able to even function with the COVID-19 type thing going on? I mean, it's been like 100 days.
Right?
But Watson's not the only one who's wondering about Holmes right now. Atheleny Jones shows up, and he is just as exhausted by this case as Holmes is. He is very frustrated. He got a telegram from Holmes, though. So he has arrived at the house where Holmes has told him to come because something interesting is going to happen at the end of this chapter, huh?
Once again, Sherlock is using the latest technology of the time. Used the telegram. He got the kids there, and now he gets the police officer there.
This is a lot of advertisements for the telegram system, that's for sure. An aged seafaring man arrives. He knows where the missing ship is and where the treasure can be found. Of course, it's Sherlock in disguise. One of his better disguises this time.
They didn't even know that, Steve. He sits down and asks for a whiskey and soda?
What was it? Of course he did.
No. Anthony, the police officer got it because he was thirsty. It's hot outside. And of course, drinking alcohol helps.
So Sherlock reveals that he is close to the conclusion here, but we have a big cliffhanger ending, which includes a list for Jones to procure for Sherlock and the compensations that Sherlock will demand for his work. This is interesting.
This is nuts. He's going to tell who did this. But then he sets up this list of things, and the police officer's like, well, that sounds reasonable.
Well, and the whole thing is a little irregular, right? So I love, he says, when we secure the men, we shall get the treasure, Sherlock says. I think that it would be a pleasure to my friend here to take the box round to the young lady to whom half of it rightfully belongs. Let her be the first to open it, eh, Watson? Now, this is a real sign of their friendship. Like, the first thing he negotiates for, now that he's in a position of power, is for Watson to have a, like, good shot at getting the girl.
Sherlock becomes the ultimate wingman here, doesn't he? Mm-hmm.
And this is such a change in the character. He would never notice a relationship happening between Watson and a female human, but this here is the story of Watson falling in love with Mary.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. And then Jones says, rather an irregular proceeding, said Jones, shaking his head. However, the whole thing is irregular, and I suppose we must wink at it. The treasure must afterwards be handed over to the authorities until after the official investigation.
I suppose we must wink at it. Seriously? that's your best police procedure? Is, oh, well, the whole thing's odd, so we might as well make it odder. It's fine.
Fine. He just wants to solve this thing. Everyone's so frustrated, right?
If it ever comes up in court, I'll deny it.
Right?
And then Sherlock asks for an interview with the criminal before the police, which is also rather irregular. He wants to hear the matter from the lips of Jonathan Small himself. You know I like to work the detail of my cases out. There is no objection to my having an unofficial interview with him, either here in my rooms or elsewhere, as long as he is efficiently guarded. And once again, poor Atheleny Jones, man. He's like, well, you are master of the situation, he says. I have had no proof yet of the existence of this Jonathan Small. However, if you can catch him, I don't see how I can refuse you an interview with him.
All right.
Well, easily. All right.
So very easy.
So my job right now for writing fanfiction is to be the attorney just blowing up every one of Sherlock Holmes' cases for these crazy. So tell me again, God. How did you prompt the guilty party?
Find this evidence.
This proposed guilty person.
Right, exactly.
You broke into how many apartments to get this information? Okay, that's inadmissible. Thank you.
Right?
didn't bother to get a warrant. It's okay. It's fine.
You'll have to give him a very British name, but this is going to be like the greatest attorney ever. They're going to go, well, what did you do? Well, I just blew up every one of Sherlock Holmes' cases. Greatest attorney ever.
Nobody likes the greatest attorney ever. You want the greatest detective ever.
Nobody's selling that book, Chip.
So that brings us to the end of this chapter. And so Sherlock confirms that is understood then perfectly. And then, you know, very questionably, Athelney Jones says, is there anything else? He's just given him the treasure and the criminal. Like, what else does he even have to give? Only that I insist upon your dining with us, says Sherlock. It will be ready in half an hour. I have oysters and a brace of grouse with something a little choice in white wines. Watson, you have never yet recognized my merits as a housekeeper. End of chapter. Oh my goodness, what is happening here?
That is so bizarre. Look at the grouse. Look at the grouse.
Oh my. I know. And so Holmes, he's feeling so triumphant here, right? That he's got poor Athelney Jones, who's mocked him in the past. He's got him over a barrel, not a barrel of creosote, but he basically is like, look, I have all the answers. Here's what I need from you. I need the treasure. I need the criminal. And I need you to enjoy it. I need you to sit down and socialize with us and to admit that.
You to enjoy it.
I mean, doesn't it kind of feel like that? Like, I need... Was that wrong to say? I'm sorry.
You're not wrong. No, you're not wrong. It's just so ridiculous. This is a ridiculous ending to this chapter.
But he's like, you need to acknowledge that I know what I'm doing. I'm even a super good cook, which you may or may not have acknowledged in the past. It's a funny moment.
I'm just going to note that there's not a single vegetable mentioned in this meal.
Nope.
Except for grapes.
I think there may be a little asparagus in that white wine sauce. Maybe.
Oh, and then goodness. We're off to the theater.
This is so fun. It is surprising that it's not a theater. It is surprising that he does not say, oh, and tonight, even though I'm exhausted from being up for the last 36 hours doing this investigation, we're going to go to the theater because this particular person is performing. Yes, that is, you're right.
We only have three chapters left, Steve. We only have three chapters.
Yeah.
I can't believe it. This has gone by so quickly.
Mm-hmm. We are going to get to the meat of this definitely in the next chapter. We're going to see some things start to happen for sure. I hope everybody out there is listening along, enjoying along, reading along with us. We would love to hear from you. Give us a call or a text, send us an email. Follow our hashtag TMS Sherlock Holmes for all of the feedback from around the world, and go to our dedicated Sherlock Holmes website, sandwiches@irregularhours.com, for the list of all of our conversations, as silly as they are, from across the canon of Sherlock Holmes. Join us tomorrow as we get into chapter 10. Wow, chapter 10 of The Sign of Four. I want to thank you again for listening to Too Much Scrolling. I'm Steve Fodor.
I'm Chip Hessenflow.
And I'm Pam Bedore.
Is grouse a Scooby snack? Where's Toby?